Hi, this is John Udell. My guest for this week's podcast is Mike Hudak, one of the founders of the video sharing service Blip TV. We talked a little bit about the entertainment dimension of video sharing, but also a lot about the knowledge sharing dimension. You'll also hear about some efforts to break down the walled gardens that these services have historically been and federate metadata across them.
Hey, John. How you doing? It's Mike Hudak.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Good, thanks. How about yourself?
Good, thanks. I just finished uploading a video to Blip, actually.
Oh, wonderful. How'd it go?
It went really well.
Excellent.
It's a kind of an experiment in where the how-to dimension of this could go.
Excellent.
Well, I've been interested in that for a long time. So, well, you'll see. But over the weekend, I made a video about my lawnmower.
I see that right here, yeah.
And, you know, on the face of it, it's an absurd thing, you know, but actually, it's quite fascinating because this is a class of product that, in my opinion, is very much misunderstood by a lot of people and dismissed by them, you know, partly because they don't realize that there's a kind of a modern generation of these things, but partly also, as someone who's had this thing for 6 years and kind of worked through the problems that, that came up and figured out what to do about it, you know, and it wasn't very hard for me to do.
Yep.
In my blog posting that I just put up this morning, this leads to the speculation that what happens when, in a sort of a commons-based peer production mode, people find it in their own interest to share these little bits of knowledge and experience that, you know, because they happen to be experts in those particular things, are not difficult for them to communicate, don't take a long time for them to communicate, but once they're put out there into the cloud and can be found by other people, can have a pretty powerful effect.
Yep.
So anyway, yeah, why don't you start with who you guys are and you know where this came from for you and stuff like that.
Absolutely. My name is Mike Hudak. I'm a founder of Blip.tv, which is at the highest level, a video sharing site. We started the site just a little bit over a year ago, and it was a result of, there are five founders, and we were all looking for kind of a project. We had some software that we had already developed. It's actually been around for 7 or 8 years, the underlying software, mm-hmm. and we were looking for a good application for it.
And how would you characterize that substrate?
You could look at it as a knowledge management platform,
okay,
or a blogging platform. It has a reputation system built in, kind of sophisticated search systems, and it supports everything from video to calendar entries.
Okay.
What you find on Blip, of course, is video. But we were looking for a good application for it right around the time that we joined the video blogging group on Yahoo.
Mm-hmm.
All of the founders were all very focused on the democratization of media. A lot of us have been bloggers in past lives where we just found this amazing ability to put our thoughts out there and actually have them received, and all of the cliches about the democratization of the printing press and all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And we joined the group, and we found that there were actually dozens or even hundreds of people at that time already producing really good video content, really good content.
Mm-hmm.
Much of it serialized. Many of these people were creating brands for themselves. And it was really a beautiful thing. And they didn't really have the infrastructure there to support them. They were posting to our media. There's a site called freevlog.org.
Yeah.
And freevlog had about a dozen steps, if not more, for how to set up your video blog. You had to go to Blogger and get a blog there. You had to, in order to host your thumbnail images, you had to get an account on Flickr. You needed to get an account on R-Media to host your video, but that wasn't quite enough because R-Media was actually backed by the Internet Archive, so you had to go to the Internet Archive and get an account.
Right.
But by the time you were done, you needed about a dozen different user accounts, and the whole thing was a house of cards, and your video may serve one day and not the other. And so we kind of looked around and said, boy, you know, we have this software, we have servers, we have bandwidth, and we can really help. And so about a week later, we launched the first version of Blip, which we announced on the video blogging list. We got one user, which is a little bit less than the response we had been hoping for, but that really taught us quite a bit about this community and about how serious these people are and what it is that they care about. They care about openness, they care about reliability, they want to know that they're very, I don't want to overstate this, but kind of suspicious of being taken advantage of.
Well, I think it's interesting the phrase, this community. And I want to explore that a little bit because I was, well, actually over the weekend I was out on my bike and I was catching up on some of the podcasts from BloggerCon. Actually, this was last weekend, and that's how I heard about Blip TV, actually. There's a woman called Ryan who led the video blogging session at BloggerCon. And one thing that I found fascinating was she opened up by saying, "Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm a video blogger."
Yes.
And it was like that was her primary identity.
Yes.
You know, we see this kind of over and over as these technologies move through the pipeline, that initially people identify themselves with the technologies.
Quite right.
Rather than with whatever the technology enables them to do more or better. Just as I kind of deny the existence of a quote-unquote blogging community, because it just seems like a transient phenomenon to me. In other words, it just, at a certain point, won't and shouldn't be interesting.
Right, because it slips below that level, right?
Yeah. So there will be some relatively small number of folks for whom their primary identity is creative expression in the video medium, just as there always has been a population of kind of, you know, true filmmakers, right? But then there's going to be, I would guess, just a very large number of folks who are using the technology in the course of whatever their real lives or their real work is, you know, just to extend their ability to communicate and collaborate.
That's exactly right. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Okay.
The interesting thing about video blogging is, as a movement or a community, is that there are certain things that set it apart in the same way that there are certain things that set blogging apart.
Mm-hmm.
And, it, you know, at the end of the day, I think that most of that is around the ability for these people to have a voice and a means of expression that wasn't previously available.
Mm-hmm.
And their taking advantage of that at the moment is an unusual thing.
Yes.
And so, they, you know, people want to identify with that unusual thing and be part of that cool new thing that's happening. And yeah, I mean, eventually I think that we will most certainly get to the point where people will say, no, I'm a lawnmower expert.
Or whatever. Yeah,
or whatever.
Exactly.
You
exactly.
Know? And this is a tool that I use in order to talk about lawnmowers.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, so from that perspective, it does seem that the first generation of these video sharing sites, kind of like the first generation of blogging tools, is not really oriented in that sort of long-term way, right?
I think a lot of them aren't.
Yeah. But you know, as we discussed in email, you've got some efforts underway to componentize and allow some service orientation, if you will, to exist in this space, you know, so that the metadata management and so that the bandwidth and so that the file management and so that, you know, the reputation and all of these other aspects can be not just in principle separable concerns, but actually separated and recombined.
That's right. And John, I'll say that, you know, we picked up our first user from that announcement, and really only one user, maybe half a dozen, or, you know, and we sat back and we looked around and we said, why did we get such a small response? Like, here we're offering reliable bandwidth, we're offering this, we're offering that. Like, you know, you would think that more people would heed the call. And we realized a few things right at that moment. We realized, first of all, that people are pretty cautious about putting eggs in a new basket, right? And we also found that we really needed to address, more than addressing the underlying kind of bandwidth concern, we needed to address the workflow concern, which was that it was taking everybody way too long to post video. It was an hour or more. And then there was also this concern about walled gardens and all of this. And so we sat back and we developed three features that we hoped would make the difference and get us more users. And the first feature was cross-uploading to the Internet Archive.
Mm-hmm.
We said, we will host your video. It'll be fast and it'll be reliable. But you always know that the Internet Archive will be around. You always know that they're there. You know your video isn't going to disappear one day if you upload it there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we automated that step. Mm-hmm. We said, if you give us your Internet Archive credentials, we'll automatically upload your video to the archive for you. And you know that it's always there.
Right.
And if, heaven forbid, anything happens to Blip, we'll redirect all your video URLs to the archive URL.
Right?
So that's your first kind of safety net. The second thing we did was we just rolled in support for Creative Commons.
Yep. Which
and
is
that
nice.
Was very important, I think.
Yes.
And the third thing that we did was we developed this thing we call cross-posting, which is an automated system where you, in a similar way that you would share your Internet Archive credentials, you kind of share your blogging credentials. You know, you say my blog is here or there. This is my username and password. You save that, and then every time that you go to upload a video, you have a bunch of checkboxes which say, you know, put this on my blog, put this on this group blog I participated in, put this here. And that really grew out of an understanding that we developed that video is a network product, that people want to make it available for consumption kind of all over the web. They don't want people to have to come to Blip to watch it.
Yep.
And so those were the three things that we built, and we released them the next month. We went to a barbecue in New Jersey called VloggerQ, and we gave a demo there, ate some fantastic Thai barbecue up on the roof, or Cambodian barbecue, and we picked up a few hundred users out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those three features were enough for us to pick up almost everybody who was at the barbecue and more. Like, the word spread quickly from there. And then since then, and I shouldn't make this sound like a change, because it wasn't really, but our focus has been very solidly on openness, on transparency, on portability. We now cross-post to dozens and dozens of different blogging systems, to Delicious, to Flickr. We offer RSS feeds with, like, the FLV file, the Flash transcoded version, available for aggregators to get their hands on. We don't put logos on anything, and it's all about getting the video out to places that people want to share it and people want to watch it, and not imposing our brand or anything else on it. The people who are creating this video want their own brand to be foremost.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And this is very much in line with the claim that I've been making for a long while now, which is that services like yours that are based on data lock-in will ultimately fail.
Yes.
The only way to offer value add that's valid is to make the use of my data in the context of your service more powerful and more convenient.
Exactly.
Than the use of my data in the context of other services.
Yes.
And so it does appear that you guys have taken that point very much to heart, and that's your strategy, which I think is great. It's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out in terms of people more generally perceiving the value of that approach.
Yeah, it's already happening to some degree. You know, there are a very limited number of sites that you can go to, Blip being foremost among them, where you get an RSS feed that works in iTunes. You know, that's actually a pretty rare thing out there right now. And so there are things like that show value today.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a new crop of services coming up, like Dabble, for example, Mary Hodder's kind of video aggregation destination site.
Yeah, she wrote to me as well as you did after that. I forget, what was it you were responding to? Oh, the Walled Garden.
The Walled Garden article, yeah.
She also wrote to me about that. Yeah, so let's talk about that. If we agree that we want services to compete on the value other than proprietary data,
right?
What is the next step? You know, what is it? You know, I mean, there are umpteen video sharing services out there right now, for example, and you know, with a fair amount of technical sophistication, I could scurry around and kind of gather up and normalize the tag sets from at least from those of them that offer APIs, and I'm sure not all do, but probably some do. But you know, what's the what's the next step here, right? How do we get this? How do we get this to work more efficiently? And to the extent that we do, how do you maintain a business?
Right. Well, about a year ago, at that barbecue that we went to, we started a working group called Video Vertigo.
Uh-huh.
It started because we were doing a lot of off-site video distribution, and we wanted to be able to offer video uploaders accurate statistics on video views.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went to the makers of FireAnt, which is a desktop video aggregator, and the creator of Mefedia, which is a web-based desktop web-based video aggregator, and we said, you know, we need an API to share that kind of data.
So this is an API to viewership stats across these different services.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so we started the next day. My co-founder Charles started the group Video Vertigo, which is a Yahoo group, and we got those guys on it. We got maybe half a dozen other representatives on it, and we just started going back and forth in email about what it is that we need in order to enhance the commons. What kind of data sharing do we need?
Mm-hmm.
The pie in the sky vision is that it doesn't matter where a video is, it doesn't matter where it's being watched, it doesn't matter even where it's being hosted, but that there is metadata in the cloud that can be associated with that video and written to about that video.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, that video can travel all over the place, and you can be watching it on your TiVo and tag it on the TiVo, and that tagging operation, just for example, will travel into the cloud, and then the cloud will somehow get that those tags out to every service that has an interest in that video.
Exactly. So as I mentioned in that Walled Garden essay, this is obviously in the interest of everyone, with the possible exception of the Walled Garden people who,
right?
It's an interesting question as to how do you make the case that it's in Blip's enlightened self-interest
right.
to operate that way. So how do you make that case?
First of all, I'll say that we are almost ready with that tag sharing cloud. We have a service called MirrorPlay, which Blip's engineers have developed in cooperation with the community.
Okay.
The standards come from the community. The implementation comes from Blip.
Okay.
And it's pretty much ready to launch in the next couple of weeks.
So this will be general purpose. It won't. It's a general purpose tag sharing thing that needn't
yep.
only be about video. So that sounds really interesting. How's that
That's
going
right.
to work?
It uses a kind of a REST API with, it's almost like pingback, if you're familiar,
mm-hmm.
but with a central server, which rebroadcasts tagging operations to members of the cloud. So if a video is hosted on Blip and being watched on MeFedia and somebody tags it on MeFedia, that is a tagging operation, and that tagging operation affects MeFedia's database directly.
Okay.
And then is sent in an HTTP request to MirrorPlay.
Okay.
And then MirrorPlay takes that and rebroadcasts it to member services. So Blip will get a copy of that tagging operation and can do with it as it sees fit.
Okay, so you'll get the stuff in global tag buckets, and therefore this won't require the transmission of individual account credentials across sets of services, or it could, but it needn't. Is that the idea?
It doesn't need to. There's support in the standard for identity of the tagger. We anticipate beefing that up quite a bit as we move forward in order to deal with comment spam, or tag spam, I should say, and
yeah.
all those different issues. Right now, we're very focused on getting a first iteration out the door, and then we have plans. We're exploring the use of, you know, public cryptography signed
yeah.
tagging operations and all of that.
No, I think that's really wise, because there's low-hanging fruit here just in aggregating things into the global buckets.
Yep.
In other words, you know, if I'm looking for something on X, it's not primarily the case that I care about who tagged X. I just care
right.
about, you know, what's been tagged with X.
Yep.
And
yep.
so, yeah, I think that that's cool. And I'm going to guess that yours is going to wind up being not the only one of these tag sharing federations which exist. And so
right.
then we'll have to have a federation of federations, yada, yada. But,
I think
you know,
we're already moving in that direction. So I can't talk about it too much, but we're working on federating our system, MirrorPlay, with Pingerati, which is Technorati's microformats
yeah.
sharing
yeah.
system. And they actually already, it's actually very gratifying to both sides, because our systems work very, very similarly without having had any contact in terms of their design. And then we met each other, compared notes, and found that we had pretty much come to implement the same thing.
Okay.
Which was wonderful from an engineering standpoint. It means that, you know, great minds hopefully are thinking alike, right?
So although I believe that it is in your enlightened self-interest
right.
and in the enlightened self-interest of these other services to collaborate in this way and to pool your metadata, how would you make that argument from a business perspective as to why it is?
The first kind of underlying piece of that argument is that the fundamental economy that we're operating in has changed. We've gone from, particularly with video, but in all things, really, we've gone from an economy of scarcity to an economy of plenty.
Mm-hmm.
And when you move to an economy of plenty, I think that you have to think about things in a radically different way. And the first thing that you have to realize is that you really can't lock things down to one location, because there will always be other locations. There will always be, you know, it's the same argument that you can make about DRM or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
That at the point that you're frustrating the user to that degree by saying, this video needs to be watched on Blip, or this video can't be watched on your hard drive, or it can't be watched on your iPod, I think that that's a very destructive thing.
I agree. So that creates a kind of a negative
right.
part
so
of the argument.
What's the positive?
Right? Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
What is the positive argument?
The positive argument is that we don't need somebody to go to Blip's site to make money, to make revenue, if you like. Our role in this marketplace is to help other people make money, right? So the services that we offer to video publishers on that level, you know, we offer them ad sales support. We offer them we will be offering paper download support, all of these different areas of monetization.
Mm-hmm.
And none of them, none of these methods of monetization require Blip's website to work.
Right.
You can embed advertisements.
Right.
There's no reason why they have to be tied to a particular website.
Right.
You can do DRM-less paper download without having the purchase happen on Blip's site, as long as there's some sort of a standard for doing that on somebody's blog or in an aggregator, and those are the standards that we're trying to develop. There's no reason why people have to come to Blip to Blip.tv to make money.
Yes.
For us to make money.
Yes.
And in fact, at that point, our incentive is to make sure that as many people as want to can see this video. We want it to be on the front page of Yahoo Video. We want it to be on the front page of Dabble. We want it to be in the iTunes Music Store so that more people see it and more people have an opportunity to see those advertisements or pay to download it or
yes.
subscribe to it.
Yes. Now, my sense, and this may or may not be part of where you want to go with this, but my sense is that what we're going to see happen here is the recreation of the tens of thousands of communities of interest or communities mm-hmm. of practice, you know, which were formerly most evident on the Usenet.
Right.
It was a historical accident of the way that the Usenet worked. That is, it had no memory. It never became a home for those communities in a really rich, deep way. You know, and I think that where blogging is going to go and this kind of stuff is going to go is that these communities will now have a much richer place to collect their shared material, their shared knowledge, their shared experience. And that also, from that perspective, each of these communities is going to have slightly different needs in terms of how they want to be supported.
Right.
Just like every business process is unique, every workflow is unique. These are all sets of people who are different, partly because the activity that draws them together is different. So that says that there's going to be a need for, and therefore an opportunity to satisfy the need for some specialization or differentiation mm-hmm. or customization of these group spaces.
Right.
Right. In other words, the group space for the knitters, you know, won't look the same as the group space for the mountain climbers. So they're going to have different sets of services combined in different ways,
yep.
you know, so that
yep.
a platform that's in a position to accomplish that differentiation and specialization on behalf of these different communities would be an interesting thing.
Definitely. It's something that I want to see emerge. I want a page that brings together my videos from Blip, my photos from Flickr, my Netflix queue, and all of these things into an environment that I can call my own, and yet I can use all of these other services to provide the data that fills that in
mm-hmm.
and builds the community of one, right? My
mm-hmm.
my homepage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's a... I have to agree that I think that is where things are going, that the knitters create their space, which in my vision, bring in all of these different services through web services. Bring in the Flickr photos that have been tagged by the members of the community or published by members of the community, and bring in the Blip videos that are part of that community, and bring
yeah.
in headlines that are relevant, right?
But they're going to be different. It turns out that origami has gotten really interesting in recent years. There is actually an open source software tool that will produce the piece of paper with the fold lines on it. You draw something, and then it figures out how to fold it.
Right.
Right. And
right.
then it prints out the, you know, so the point being that in that case, that community of practice is going to, among other things, be collecting around the use of a software tool.
Right.
Which is going to be delivered as a service.
Yep.
Right. So in other words, it's not just going to be the quote unquote content that lives in these spaces,
right.
you know, and the delivery of that, you know, being done differently depending on the needs and interests of the group. But there are going to be various kinds of content management and various kinds of software delivered as a service,
yep.
you know, that will all be specific to that realm of experience. And
no, I completely agree. Our back end software supports all sorts of aggregation and all sorts of, you know, communities built around those specific interests. And, you know, our business at this point is basically, regardless of that software support, is providing one of the services that will plug into those communities.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to see those things grow, and I want to see... One of the things that I find very interesting, we were talking earlier about the different reasons why people publish video, and you alluded to a little bit in the original post about walled gardens, and you know, you had I guess bunny rabbits in this video, right? And you know, your latest is about lawnmowers, and you know, I see people who are creating TV shows,
yeah,
meant for mass audiences.
Yeah,
I see people creating TV shows that are meant for niche audiences. And then I see people who are just literally sharing knowledge for the sake of sharing knowledge. Mm-hmm. And I see people who are, you know, just like blogging, right? And then I see people who are sharing their lives, you know, in a very similar manner as to blogging. And I think that each one of these groups have their own end game. The guy who's creating the mass market TV show wants to end up on set-top boxes.
Yeah.
And he wants to end up in iTunes. And the guy who is sharing specific domain knowledge about lawn care wants to end up in a kind of vertically integrated community built around aggregated content about lawn care. And the guy who is chronicling his life probably just wants the video on a site that he has full control over. He wants a Drupal-based site or a movable type or WordPress-based site where, you know, play with the templates and do whatever he wants and build his own identity around it.
Mm-hmm. You know? Now, to date, I think you would agree that the vast majority of what we have seen is in the nature of, you know, like my little cute animals thing, right? There's obviously way too many of those out there.
There are a lot of those. Yeah.
And, you know, and a lot of it is entertainment-oriented or, mm-hmm. or would like to be.
Right.
But would you agree that the knowledge sharing in particular domains is only... as of yet, a very small part of what's going on.
Yeah, I think that, well, so the first thing, though, is that I think that there's we don't like to admit it, but I think that there's still a very large gulf between media makers and media sharers and media consumers.
Well, there's no reason not to admit it. It's obviously true.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the reality that we live in, right? And so I think that when you look at the video being published today, the first thing that you have to do is you have to separate out the stuff that's just shared from the stuff that's created.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to make a differentiation between the SNL skit that's been recorded to TiVo and ripped to QuickTime and the Rocket Booms or Captain Humphreys of the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first differentiation you have to make. And then, you know, just looking at that, you've taken away a huge swath of the content by focusing only on original stuff. And then when you look at the original stuff, I think that it breaks down into, right now, kind of three categories. It should be four categories. So the first is friends and family sharing, which is
the vast majority of
vast majority, right? Yes. It's my vacation in France. It's my cute animal. It's you know, my kid's birthday party.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second category that you have is viral videos, which are designed to attract a huge number of people in a short time and kind of start this fad, right? In the jib jab model.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those viral videos are original. Probably most of them are copyrighted, but you know, for our purposes, we'll just talk about original.
Although I would say, in perhaps more cases than not, the ones that actually do go viral were never intended to. Like the Star Wars kid, I don't think had a clue that, you know.
Yeah, yeah. No, I would agree with that. That's true. Yeah, the Star Wars kid definitely did not have a clue that was going to happen. Third category, I think, is boy, that was actually a pretty good video. Is kind of original serialized content, which is where we're focusing a lot with Blip.
Yeah.
Which is like Captain Humphreys. These are these guys who, their original plan was to build an 11.5-foot boat and sail around the world solo.
Mm-hmm.
This one guy, you know, shoot video of it, shoot video of the whole process. They're building the boat. They're sailing around the world. It turns out that some guy left not too long ago in an 8-foot boat to break the world record.
Mm.
So they had to reevaluate. And now they're doing this kind of peer directed world travel. So they're going to sail around the world, and they're going to allow comments. They're going to allow anyone to set their route and vote on it.
Oh, that's funny.
It's going to be very cool.
That's funny.
And that's like a show. It's designed to gather subscriptions. It's designed to be watched in iTunes. It's designed to be watched in TV Tonic on your Windows Media Center. It's designed to be watched in Akimbo,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then you have the I think what may be the last category, but, you know, one thing that we find in all things, right, is that you expand these number of categories as the medium matures, but is kind of basic knowledge sharing, which is just getting underway, I think. And that's the how-to, and that, you know, we see a little bit of that right now, like everything from how to peel a mango to how to change the RAM in your MacBook.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think that that's just getting underway, and I think it'll be very interesting to see where that goes from a sharing perspective and from a business perspective.
Well, I think it's incredibly interesting because it, in my mind, creates the opportunity for a mode of learning that hasn't existed for a really long time in our society, and that is the mode of apprenticeship.
Yep.
You know, and there are just, if you think about it, in so many professions, the bottleneck is, what is your opportunity to observe the master at work, right? We just don't have very many opportunities to look over people's shoulders and watch them do things. And if you start to expand that out, there just are an incredible number of different situations in which, and this is what's interesting to me, is it wouldn't be particularly burdensome at all in this case, you know, on the production side. In other words, you know, I actually, the one that I just made, I put a fair amount of effort into editing, you know, but I also referenced a video that I acquired a couple of years ago as a part of a printer repair kit.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty crummy as a video, but it didn't matter at all.
Right.
You know, this was just literally the HP repair guy with a camera pointed in his direction as he talked through the process of disassembling the printer and replacing this roller. And, you know, as a result, I was able to accomplish that task.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you start to multiply that out, right, and if people start to realize that it doesn't have to be high production values to be effective.
Right.
In these very specific targeted ways, right? You know, and then you start to have a catalog of that kind of stuff. It's going to be awesome.
I think so. So John, what's the business case behind that? Do the producers of these videos give them away for free to enrich the commons? Do they charge a download fee for them? Probably some do one and some do others. Or?
I've been thinking about this a lot, and I would say that it's going to be an amalgam of all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
But I would also say that the most important inputs to the economy, you know, which is to say information and knowledge, can be input now by some, you know, somewhere on the order of a billion people,
right,
you know, to an environment that, you know, where they're accessible to that same billion people. You know, it's like, what does that mean? And I think part of what it's going to mean is that it'll be in people's interest to do this stuff, especially if it's pretty easy for them to do.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't require a big investment. They'll want to do it just to establish their reputation.
Yeah.
I actually am an expert at this thing, and it's in my interest, my name to show up in Google in association with this thing and in association with this demonstration, because even if I don't attempt to get paid directly for it, the enhancement to my reputation is going to bring other things my way that probably will lead to, you know, consulting work or, you know, what have you, right? You know,
yep.
And you know, that I think is going to be a really powerful force. It's not going to, you know, it's not going to put food on the table directly for people, and it's obviously not going to replace the current economic system. But it's, I think, increasingly as an augmentation of the current system, going to be an amazing and interesting thing.
Yeah, I can't disagree. I think you're right. And I think the economics and the perspective of the people creating the content make a lot of sense. The more opportunity you have to stake out your reputation and become a recognized expert in the public domain, I mean, just in terms of, you know, silly things like salary negotiations and interviews,
mm-hmm.
which is not at all a silly thing. I don't know why I would say it's a silly thing. That's incredibly powerful to be able to put on your resume that you produce these things.
And, yeah.
You know, when somebody Googles you for your job interview, to find that, it's almost like a job interview in and of itself, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I went to the Vertigo thing, and it looks like it's still, I mean, it's like it prompted for a password or something, so that's not actually out there yet?
If you go to the wiki, it's sort of out there. The password protection on the wiki is actually designed to deter spam bots.
Okay.
So I always find it funny that the username and password is in the prompt. And the username is video and the password is Vertigo.
Okay. So, but I mean, I know that there will be a number of people who will be just curious about about the Tag Federation stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, from that perspective, you know, if I'm somebody who's, you know, in Delicious, you know, but I wish that I was in Ferrell, or I'm in one video service and I wish I was in Delicious and other video services, you know, how do they, you know, what's like the first step?
You know, so far, we haven't rolled Mirrorplay out yet. There's a spec on videovertigo.org/wiki.
Okay.
Which is still in a little bit. We've pretty much finalized it. We pretty much put a feature freeze on it, if you like, while we finish implementation of the server side and client side, which we're finishing up now. The first implementation is going to be on Blip and on a handful of video aggregating sites.
Okay.
From there, we're going to see what the implementation looks like and kind of move from there. And the first implementation is pretty much going to be a whitelisted service. It's going to be implemented on a service level. Individual services like Blip or Dabble or Mifedia can choose to participate and be whitelisted in, basically. And
They're
unfortunately at this point, because we're very worried about spam, that's the way that we feel that we have to do it until we have individual accountability built into the system.
Right.
Because we've already found, just in opening up our first Vertigo project, was a feed sharing service where if you started an account on Blip, for example, we would send a ping to various aggregators saying, hey, there's a new feed for you to pick up on and put in your directory, you know. And we found that even that was starting to be attacked by some level of spam. Mm-hmm. And even the inappropriate reports, we have a button, you know, report is inappropriate on Blip, that we've started getting comments spammed through.
Okay.
And so we're very sensitive to that at this point, because we feel that this needs to be, to a great extent, a trusted service, in that we know that the metadata that we're getting out from it is good. With that said, there are actually opportunities already for some level of tag sharing, which is happening today.
Okay.
If you post a video to Blip, you have an option to cross-post it to Delicious.
If you provide your credentials.
Exactly right.
Okay.
And so that will automatically post that video to Delicious with the tags that you used on Blip.
Okay.
When you are posting to Blip and you're tagging on Blip, we offer tag auto-completion, and that's done with the tags that you've used on Blip so far and the tags that you've used on Delicious today.
Okay.
Once you post the video, we have cross-posting built in, where we then cross-post. When we cross-post, there's an option to include your tags in the cross-post.
Okay.
And that's done with the Technorati rel tag format.
Okay.
And then the RSS that we export has tags included four different ways.
Yeah, you mentioned iTunes. And
you know, we use iTunes keywords, RSS keywords.
Yeah.
We have them all as categories.
Right. If it moves, support it. Or even if it doesn't.
Right, exactly.
So I just have sort of one more kind of big question for you.
Yeah.
And let me think about how to put this. So we have a couple of entities out there in the landscape that are in the business of owning and operating what I would call these intergalactic clusters.
Okay.
Right. You know, so your Googles and your Amazons.
Sure.
You know, and really probably count them on the fingers of one hand, number of entities who are in the business of owning and operating this, you know, robust web scale infrastructure, which is going to be something that lots of other people can't duplicate,
right?
And therefore shouldn't try, in my opinion. So instead, it's about how to sort of, you know, be the intelligent little mammal scurrying around, you know, not getting trampled on by these beasts. And I just wonder, you know, from your perspective, how you think about that problem or that question.
Well, just from an infrastructure standpoint, there are a lot of things that we do differently than most other companies in the space, I think, to keep our costs down and be able to scale intelligently and efficiently. And so our costs of providing the service, I think, are a lot lower than one would expect. Obviously, we don't have the economies of scale of those gorillas out there, but it's not quite as onerous as it could be, because this is what we do, right? We aggregate all of this traffic and all of this into one place and one strategy.
Mm-hmm.
From a larger kind of business and technical standpoint, I think that there are plenty of opportunities to scurry around, if you will, around these guys and among these guys. And to a large extent, I think that their plays in video so far are pretty hesitant and are kind of placeholders.
Mm-hmm. Well, sure, they're waiting for you to show them what they should do next.
Exactly right.
But that's kind of the question, is once you have shown them what they should do next, and then, you know, should they choose to do it? I guess what I'm really asking here is, what are the opportunities for smaller players who are going to leverage and work with that intergalactic infrastructure rather than trying to compete with it, right?
One of the things that we do, for example, is work to make it possible for blip-uploaded video to end up in Yahoo.
Uh-huh.
A Yahoo video.
Uh-huh.
And we'd like to do that with Google Video as well. The particular business terms around that are a little fuzzy because of the differences, particularly in terms of service. Mm-hmm. And our terms of service are very, very, very friendly to the end user. You know, you retain all ownership, you retain all copyright.
Right.
And we have to make sure that when we provide automated means for distribution and redistribution, that we do such in a way that is compatible with those values. Right. So as much as we can, we want to get the video out to those places and allow them to build destination sites around it. We don't have to build that destination site like we were talking about earlier.
Right.
The second part of that is that there are a whole lot of services that these guys offer that we can leverage. To some extent in the video arena, they're not all out yet, but mm-hmm. I'm very much looking forward to Google AdWords for video.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very much looking forward to Yahoo Publisher Network for video.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very much interested in the long-term prospects for S3 and whether we can leverage S3's infrastructure for our purposes. I think that all of these things are going to be very useful to us, and we make use of them to the maximum extent possible. You know, we don't have this kind of religious need to do everything ourselves. In fact, it's almost the opposite. Our interest is in creating and using as much competition in the outside world as possible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if there are a dozen ad companies out there, our interest is in building partnerships with all 12 of them and playing them off against each other.
Yep.
And four of those are probably going to be 800-pound gorillas. It's going to be Microsoft. It's going to be Google. It's going to be Yahoo. It's going to be Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And we will take advantage of that to the maximum extent possible. And I think that goes to everything. And as a matter of fact, the newest version of Blip that we'll be rolling out very shortly uses the Yahoo user interface library.
Mm-hmm.
We had our own user interface library, but we have far fewer programmers to place on that than they do. They've open-sourced their user interface library. They have programmers working on it full-time, and we are going to take advantage of that. And so instead of writing our own DHTML tricks for emulating Windows and all of these kind of things, we're just going to use their library.
Mm-hmm. Do you see a services opportunity for you guys along the lines of going back to this idea that there are particular communities of practice that are going to have, you know, particular and very different sets of needs? Is there, you know, if you will, an, you know, IBM Global Services kind of opportunity here of companies like yours working with these folks to develop kind of local?
We do already.
You do? Okay.
We have two main lines of business, and we see them intersecting at some point in terms of revenue at some point relatively soon. Our first line of business is enabling independent publishing and enabling independent publishers to make money with their independent publishing.
Mm-hmm.
The second line of business is helping 800-pound gorillas, not necessarily at Google or Yahoo, but traditional broadcasters and conglomerates, get their heads around user-generated content and bring it in as part of their business. So, for example, we did a private label, as we call them, for the Oxygen Network, which is at oxygen.blip.tv. And that's a fee-for-service with some co-branding and all of that. So it reinforces our public business. It reinforces our support for independent publishers by giving us more brand equity.
Hmm.
It also brings in revenue, and it helps us develop additional software for use to service independent publishers and get paid for doing so.
Mm-hmm.
And we are, at this point, turning away business in that part of the business.
Good problem to have.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of demand out there.
Well, it's been really fun talking to you.
I've really enjoyed it, John.
Okay. Well,
yeah,
thanks very much.
All right, John. Talk to you later.